Marvin Amori, Sandra Astar, standby. A lot of listeners calling in here. New Orleans, Louisiana. Adam is calling. Hi, Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
My main concern with the SOPA and PIPA bills as written is that, by and large, they seem to put the burden of proof of proving or disproving a claim on the targeted party. And my concern with it is I run a small photography business, you know, just on the side. I do almost all of my business through the Internet, through Craigslist, through my own website. And if, for instance, a competitor, you know, if a competitor saw, you know, a photo that looked even remotely similar to his or hers, decided, hey, maybe this guy is taking my business, files a claim against me, the first I hear of it is when my site gets taken down.
Right.
And when my business gets, you know, cut off at the knees, at least the way that I'm understanding the bill.
Sandra, what do you say to that? You hear Adam's concern, just here's one content producer in New Orleans, and you hear his worry.
If the bills did what Adam is concerned about, I would be very concerned about them as well, but the bills simply don't do that. The bills aren't directed at any U.S.-based site in the first place, so presumably you're operating in the United States if you're in New Orleans. Secondly, they deal with sites that are, in the words of the legislation, primarily designed or operated to infringe. So we're not talking about a site where there may be dispute about one image on the site or one piece of content on the site. We're talking about sites that are in operation solely to deliver copyrighted works into the United States, you know, movies that are still in the theaters, a whole roster of ebooks that that you can download in one fell swoop, that sort of thing. So I think you can take comfort in the narrowness of the definitions there. With respect to the due process claims that that are made, the burden of proof is on either the Attorney General or on the private party seeking the injunction from the court against the foreign site. It's the same process that applies to every civil action in the United States. And it's run through federal district courts where there's the opportunity for the site operator, should they wish to make themselves available to contest in the United States, to come and defend just like in any other case.
Marvin, don't worry. We've got a narrowness of definitions that ought to put people at ease here, Sandra says. And you've got, you know, you've got a kind of legal structure overseeing this that should be some guarantee against its abuse.
I wish that were the case. But the way the language is drafted in the bills, it says U.S. directed site, and then that's essentially defined to mean any site that's accessible in the United States. It's very broad. And as it turns out, Americans have a right to read foreign sites. They have a right to read Voltaire. Mm-hmm. They have a right to read Charles Dickens. These are foreign authors. So the fact that it's only targeted to foreign sites doesn't change the fact that we have a First Amendment right to access non-infringing speech made by foreign authors. But let me just give an example of how it could affect, you know, an American site very simply. There's a provision that says that circumvention of the remedies in the bill will be subject to an injunction. The sites that circumvent the law will be enjoined from certain activity. And so let's say you and I are having a conversation on Twitter, and you say, I heard that the Pirate Bay's domain has been taken down, or I hear that the Pirate Bay, its advertising has been taken down. And you say, what's the IP address of the Pirate Bay so I can get to the Pirate Bay? Mm-hmm. And I say to you, here's the IP address. And I tweet it, and all my friends tweet it, and it gets tweeted everywhere. That becomes a circumvention technology, perhaps, and there could be a liability for Twitter. So any user-generated site out there, from Facebook to YouTube, if I make a video, how to get around SOPA because it's so bad, right? And that gets shared. The question is, does YouTube become a circumvention technology? And if I encourage people to use encryption technology like Tor, the same kind that the State Department funds for Chinese dissidents, right? Is that illegal to use that kind of encryption technology, which will get me to the Pirate Bay or MegaUpload.com or any other place to watch movies illegally?
Marvin Amori, hold the thought right there, if you would. Sandra Astar's on two sides of this big, hot issue today over piracy, censorship, freedom on the web. Listeners, you can join us. Can we protect content creators and internet freedom? Would this legislation make the U.S. look more like China with firewalls and forbidden sites? Is Hollywood wrong to want strong protection here? Is it too ready to reach for censorship or not? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Here's a song protesting SOPA and PIPA to the tune of American Pie posted to a YouTube channel today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
I hear you saying, why are laws a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, free election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet dies. Speak up before the internet dies. Why are laws a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, free election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the internet, clash of titans over piracy, power, censorship, freedom on the web, big media versus big tech, and lots of ordinary internet users in between. Wikipedia is dark today. Legislation on Capitol Hill looked like it was a sure thing. Now, future uncertain. You can join the conversation today. Can we protect content creators and internet freedom? Are you a pirate? Do you get your movies bootlegged from Pirate Bay? Are you an internet innovator who fears where this legislation would take us? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Sandra Astars is with us. She's executive director of the Copyright Alliance. A lot of big media interests there pushing for this legislation. Former vice president, associate general counsel at Time Warner. Marvin Amori is with us from Washington today. Legal fellow at the New America Foundation's Open Technology Initiative. He consults with companies on the other side of this battle. How do you see it? 800-423-8255. Here's a little bit of Congressman Lamar Smith, Republican, Texas, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, lead sponsor of the Stop Online Piracy Act. He responded to the bill's detractors on a Texas radio talk show earlier this month.
We asked them to point to a single word in the bill that they think is going to hurt the internet, and they can't do it. This is a bill that goes after foreign websites. You get a court order, and these are the websites that are stealing America's innovators' inventions and selling them, and that costs us jobs, it costs us money, it hurts our inventors, it hurts our own American companies here.
So we're listening to that. At the same time, ProPublica reports that Congressman Smith got $90,000 from the entertainment industry for his 2010 reelection campaign, $47,000 from the tech industry. There's all kinds of money on all sides of this and big, strong attitudes out there. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee. That's content creation country. Bob, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to maybe try to put a little personal note. I'm a professional songwriter.
Okay.
I was a musician for many years, but I went behind the scenes and bet it all on Article 1, Section 8. And now it's either licensed legal use is the only way I make any money.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen my profession gutted. There's probably a third of the songwriters left in Nashville than there were in 2000. I've seen my own income drop precipitously. And if I Google any of my hits, my most recent one, I just did it this morning, there are hundreds of thousands of sites, most foreign. They're the top ones on the Google search. And they are right there with links, either selling my song for a dime from the Ukraine. There's advertising on there, Princess Cruises, Lysol, Verizon. Everybody's making money with every click of the mouse except for me. And I hear an awful lot of hand-wringing about potential harm to some hypothetical future individual and a total disregard for the trashing of those of us who make our living with copyrights.
Bob, you make it vivid. Let us pick it up right there, Marvin. There's a real-life creator, real-life songwriter. He sees his living going out the window. What do you say to that?
He's right. Piracy is a problem. But the bills don't address the problem very well, and they have huge collateral impacts. And it's all the result of a flawed process, really. Rather than actually bringing stakeholders to the table and figuring out a law that would address piracy and continue internet freedom, this was a rushed process by Lamar Smith and others who tried to steamroll over opposition and called anyone who opposed the bill obstructionists, whereas if we had an open dialogue, which we could have if we, like, press reset, start over, we could figure out a way to address piracy And as it turns out, piracy is something that I think people can work together on and everyone agrees is a problem. It's just that these bills go far too far because they're very one-sided.
Let's get a call from Savannah, Georgia. Gilles, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting to me that I certainly think piracy is a problem and something needs to be done about it, but that these movie companies or whoever, media companies, seem to think that there's billions of more dollars to be made from the American people or from anywhere around the world. Even if they were able to stop it, do they think that these pirates are suddenly going to open up their wallets and buy this stuff legally? I think what will happen is they will simply stop consuming the media altogether, which may be a good thing. Maybe they'll go outside. But I don't see them recouping the billions of dollars they're claiming to have lost. I don't see that as a realistic possibility.
But Bob, callers like our earlier Bob? He's a songwriter. Songwriters have, you know, what makes them special? They write songs that are so beguiling that for years people paid for them. Why wouldn't they pay for them now?
Well, I don't think people are not paying for them now. I think there are some people out there that would not have bought the album to begin with that are now obtaining the song for free. And the people that would have paid for the album in the past are still paying for the album now. The people that used to go to the movie theater are still going to the movie theater. The people that bought DVDs are still buying DVDs. Maybe a slight impact, but certainly not the majority of people. I think the people that were going to steal it and do it for free are a different crowd of person.
Yeah, Gilles, I appreciate your call. Sandra, what about it? Is it possible that the media companies are trying to, you know, reimpose an old model on the way people interact with content that just won't fly anymore? Seems to be the basic suggestion there, that you're trying to bring something back from the past that doesn't fit our age.
I think that's not the case at all. If you look at what the media companies are doing, and let me actually step back and say, even though the Copyright Alliance represents a lot of big media companies, we also represent thousands upon thousands of individual artists and creators like songwriters, photographers, individual authors, and so forth. And it's actually these